Here we go. Here we go.
It did this weird thing on my side. It's flashing. It was flashing down 3 seconds to start, 2 seconds to start, 1 seconds to start, 0 seconds to start, 0 seconds to start, zero seconds to start. And it did that a lot. It was weird. It was like
just like a weird buffering thing.
Is waiting for somebody to say Simon Says. I guess I'm not really sure.
The curtain is dropping.
Oh no! Well, how appropriate.
The curtain is lowering. The curtain is lowering until finally a spotlight shines on the stage. A lone mouthpiece speaks up and says, "Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast." We're nearing the end of, we're at season three already. We're nearing the end of season three, and boy, do we have a lot of feelings about that. Not to be overly dramatic about it or anything. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
This is an appropriate episode for you to be over dramatic, though, Cody, as we'll find out. Though also, I have to say, wouldn't the curtain be raising? You said the curtain was lowering. Wouldn't that mean that it was going down over the stage such that a spotlight would just be shining on the lowered curtain? Well, I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
We'll
the curtain's dropping. The curtain's going side to side, wishy-washy all over the place, all over the damn stage are curtains. And I'm Emily Suey, and you can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
I think part of the reason the curtains are not properly calibrated is because we do not have our super producer in the figurative digital studio today. But if he were here, I would say something like, you know, also with us today, acting without an understudy is super producer Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. And by Grepthar's Hammer, by the Sons of Warvan, Kids is spelled with a Z. Also with us today, making an encore appearance in season three, is Wayne Stainruck. Wayne, how the heck are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I was thinking, to Harry's point about if should the curtains be open or closing, that could be like the next stage play. Like, it's just the curtain moving. Like, I think that's a high critique of art. You know, it could be the next big thing.
It could be. I was thinking, you know, that weird kid who ate up like 5 minutes of the stage performance of this show. It's that kid standing in front of a lowered curtain, and that would just be, you know, me talking, and then we raise the curtain,
and then the curtain's raised,
and then it's the Wayne Stainruck show is what sure. I'm thinking. Yeah.
Wow. But, really saved that one. So the curtains were calibrated correctly after all, you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, then again, hey, we've got a whole ding-dong discussion in which we can kind of flesh that out and properly, you know, contextualize and recontextualize. And it should be said, we are here today to talk about episode 59 of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that is season 3, episode 19, going by production code order. And this very special double-length episode is called School Play. Original air date December 21st, 1998. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. After hearing that Arnold is Romeo in the school play of Romeo and Juliet, Helga does everything she can to get the part of Juliet and kiss him. Let me put different emphasis on things in that sentence. Helga does everything she can to get the part of Juliet and kiss him. She frightens the other girls who have the role ahead of her. She stresses Phoebe out by giving her stage fright. She stresses Rhonda out by showing the dress that Rhonda must wear showing the dress. This is a very poorly constructed sentence, and I'm trying to fix it on the fly. She shows Rhonda an ugly dress that the character Juliet must wear, and Rhonda goes what else? Helga scares Sheena because there's death in the play, and Sheena doesn't like that very much, and she confides in Lila a little secret, and Lila gives up the role willingly, and that more or less concludes the summary that was on Wikipedia. I tried to jazz that up a little bit. Two guys who really jazzed up this episode, as we always do, shouting those folks out, Steve Saki, who directed this one, and Steve Vixton, who wrote it. So shout out to them, some Hey Arnold OGs. And an OG for this podcast is Harry Mackin, who I'm going to give the microphone to first. Harry, how did you feel about this particular school play?
Hey, thanks, Cody. Yeah, so this is a weird one, huh? I think that more than maybe any other episode, I'm super curious about the production history and sort of background here. I had like a bunch of different theories while watching it. I was like, oh, okay, is this an episode that they submitted for awards somehow? Or like, was it supposed to be placed elsewhere in the show? Did they originally intend for it to be the season 3 finale and then they did Parents Day instead? Is it just like a sort of a pet project of Steve Vixton's, since there's a lot of writing flourish in this that really like suggested that it might be? I don't know, right? So maybe I'll do some more research after this episode. But for now, I really like this episode. I think that it's an iconic Hey Arnold episode in a lot of ways. I think that it's very memorable, particularly the excellent second act in which Helga has these sort of enacts these sort of like Machiavellian plots to take out one Juliet after another. There's something very Shakespearean and very sort of playwright-esque about that turn of events that I really enjoy and that I think is really the heart of this episode. It is just built around a lot of oddness, right? Like, first of all, there is sort of a long establishing scene at the beginning of this episode in which Helga is first mean to Arnold. Arnold states openly sort of his entire role in the show, where he's like, oh, I think secretly you're a kind, sensitive soul, and I just hope you'll be able to show it someday. And then Helga proves him right by like adjourning to the trash bin and proclaiming her love for Arnold. It's like a wild scene to put in this episode because it is so reiterative. And it made me think like, oh, is this an episode for people who have never seen this show before? Right? Like, did this have a special opening slot? Or like, was it on quote unquote primetime TV or something? And they wanted to get everybody caught up to speed. And that sort of weird pacing continues. This is one of the rare half hour episodes of Hey Arnold. And maybe this is a hot take, but like with some rare exceptions, such as the Christmas episode, I don't know that the format is particularly well suited for Hey Arnold. Maybe that's just me. And maybe that's me being used to 15 minute long episodes, but like the first half of this episode in particular could have been cut way back, I thought. Like the rubber really hits the road once Helga starts taking out the other Juliets. And I feel like that's really what we wanted to see. And I think that, not to get too ahead of myself, but like that sort of idea of juxtaposing the sort of like pseudo or faux idealized love and depiction of love in Romeo and Juliet with the sort of much more down to earth, dysfunctional and stressful, less idealized version that we see play out within the sort of play within a play. That's sort of like the point of the episode in my mind. And it feels weird that they didn't get to that earlier, right? Like the entire first half of this episode, like 15 minutes, which is the entire length of a normal episode of Hey Arnold, is devoted to just setting up the first act, right? Like it's literally structured like a play where Helga has her cackle and then literally the curtains fall. And like, there it is. Like there's the conflict that will set up the rest. And I just wonder why it's such an outsized part. Maybe it's because they had to have Tim Curry give this amazing soliloquy, which is really good as Simmons' nemesis. Maybe it's because they had to introduce all of the characters that we are going to later see Helga dismantle because this is an episode for people who are just sort of now being introduced to the series. And so every one of the characters needed that sort of introduction. But for whatever the reason, I'm left with this episode that I like. I wish it was longer or I wish it was shorter, right? Like I kind of wish that we either had more time and we made this like somehow an extra long episode and we could preserve that 15 minutes, or maybe we could have just gotten rid of a lot of the like establishing elements of this episode so that we could have gotten to the meat of the episode more quickly. Because I think that there were some weird sacrifices made in the process. And it's just a really ambitious episode, which I guess can be both good and bad. I think it mostly works, but I'm really interested in what everybody else thought too, especially like, I don't know, where does this episode, or how does it hit you? I guess I should say, like, is it sort of like does the do the good elements outweigh the weird elements, or do you come away thinking that this is sort of an awkward fit the way that I guess I kind of do?
Yeah, or to kind of rephrase that, to be or not to be. Am I right? Yeah, that's something. And
that's from Romeo and Juliet, right, Cody? That's why you said that?
Oh, wait, I don't know about that. No, I'm shouting out the great filmmaker Ernst Lubitsch. That's one of his finest movies. But yeah, to get some answers to those questions as well as potentially many more, I will turn to another OG of the pod, one Emily Sui. Emily, what did you think about this episode?
Yeah, thanks for asking. That is the question, I suppose, Cody. I agree with a lot of what Harry was saying, and I think that this episode kind of sits weird, kind of lands a bit weird, and I wonder too if it has something to do with the pacing, or just because most of it is setting up Helga to be super manipulative towards the other Juliets, and scheming and being pretty terrible to the other girls who were all excited to play Juliet, but we know she has to do it, or she thinks she has to do it because she has to get this kiss from Arnold, and this is the only way in which she sees that happening for herself is through this performance, this big school play. But yeah, so just to back up though, I think, yeah, there's stuff I like about it. I think with the pacing thing too, I'm thinking a little bit more about Arnold's Valentine, the second season holiday special, which that first half of it, we talked about kind of having like a slower lead up. And then the second half sort of crams in the two dates that are double booked for Arnold and, I'm forgetting her name. Not Helga, but what's the...
Ruth P. McDougal?
Ruth P. McDougal, his double dates with them. So just from a pacing perspective and that being another special episode, I was kind of thinking of that with Harry's points. But also, of course, was thinking about what's Opera Arnold from season two. So I think a lot of what makes this episode fun is just simply seeing the characters in these Shakespearean roles, and especially the funnier guys like Stinky playing the friar. All of his line reads are amazing. Harold is Tybalt and Curly as Mercutio, and they kind of open the play after that very lovely introduction by the mystery little girl. But so I think that's a big part of this episode, but the plot is Helga manipulating all of the Juliets and scaring them and freaking them out and getting, and then having to confess even to one of the girls, like straight up, because Lila sees through her bullshit and is kind of just like, well, no, that the violence doesn't faze me. I don't have stage fright and I like that dress. And so, wait, do you like Arnold or what's the deal, Helga? And Helga has to like grit her teeth and clench her fists and be like, okay, fine. And then she has that really funny performance of telling her about, yes, I do like him, but she's whispering it in all of that. So I think, yeah, it's just, I like the parts where it's the characters performing as these Shakespearean other characters. Characters playing different characters is kind of a fun thing, especially in this series or just in cartoons maybe. But so really the whole episode though, the like weight of it is just leading up to the kiss, right? It's just like this whole episode really is just about Arnold and Helga's first kiss. And Helga kind of talks to herself about, you know, what does this even count or does it matter? It's a performance. And yet like this is the one way she sees this happening for the two of them. So yeah, also the noticeable length of that kiss at the end, just like Simmons looking at his watch going, the whole audience going, oh my goodness. And Helga like takes a big, oh God, Cody's making some gestures. But yeah, no, she takes like a big breath after she kisses Arnold for like 5 minutes on stage in front of the whole school, in front of all the parents, in front of the grandparents, in front of everyone, in front of her teacher. My goodness, the stakes, now that I'm thinking about how many people she could do that as Juliet, as a character, but she can't even pretend, or she can't even be honest with her feelings towards him in real life. But I guess we're just nudging closer and closer to that as she talked to Lila about it, confessed, and all of that. I wasn't looking at my notes. I kind of just went off. But I have so many notes. I think that this one does sit weird, maybe just because it's so much lead up and workarounds and stuff just for the main event, which is that one, 5 minute kiss at the end. So, or it's 10 minutes. Cody, you might remember better than me, but
it was like a 15 minute kiss.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what Wayne thinks and you think, and why Wayne kind of singled this episode out. And yeah,
Wayne, why did you single this episode out, you silly goose? I would like to hear, Wayne, what you think about school play. How did this hit you? Is love just a matter of performance, to be or not to be? Any other questions you feel like answering?
Wow. So I actually, after watching it, I'm not really sure what compelled me. I was like, yeah, I want to do that one. But, trying to collect my thoughts just now, I have so many. And just to kind of bounce some ideas off of you guys, like Emily mentioned, there's another theater episode where they go to see Carmen on a field trip, and they kind of fill roles and parody that as well. And I was thinking about how the series kicks off where they all play as fruits. Like, there's a connection to theater and performance, like, throughout the show. The other thing I was thinking, I mean, obviously you guys are more knowledgeable about this series as a whole than I am, but I feel like this has to be the most sociopathic we see Helga. I know there's an episode where she poses as Arnold's pen pal to dupe him into going on a date with her. Like, she wears a disguise. Like, I was thinking, like, that was also pretty wild too, but she was putting on an act. So I was thinking about that. I was also thinking about, obviously, Tim Curry is this William Fancyson adjacent character trying to sabotage Mr. Simmons and delights in the idea of him failing. But I really thought, like, this is such a Helga-centric episode, but Mr. Wynn sort of stole the show. I'm sure we'll talk about some of his lines and his delivery later. But the other thing I was thinking about, like, I wanted to ask you guys, have any of you ever acted in a school play or production?
Oh boy. You know what? I haven't, but that was one of my, I remember just, yeah, I guess quick segue. I would actually like to hear from everybody about that before we continue with talking about the episode. That is, I did not have the pleasure of acting in any sort of like middle school or high school or community theater, whatever production, but that was something, especially senior year, like, because a lot of my friends did it, like they were in the musical. And I remember like going to see it and just like thinking about it, like, man, that would have been a really nice experience, just to like, you know, have and cherish and hold on to. And, I'm not dead yet. I could still theoretically, you know, go act in like a Coen Brothers movie or something. I live in Minnesota. I feel like it'd be pretty easy to get a role in something like that. But yeah, no experiences from me to speak of. Emily, do you have? Did you frequent that? Rather, there we go. Did you frequent the stage and or screen in a past or current life?
I definitely didn't frequent the stage or screen, but I was going through some childhood stuff the other day, like keepsake things, and I found, and I took a picture of this, so I'm glad you asked, Wayne. I found from kindergarten, I was in The Littlest Christmas Tree as an elf, and I almost forgot that happened. I think there was like a tree who was assigned to me, who was like a fifth grader, and he was very cool, or I was intimidated by him, and I was a tiny little kindergartner. But I'm credited as one of the elves in Teresa Jennings' The Littlest Christmas Tree from kindergarten, first, second, and third grades. Also, he wouldn't have been a fifth grader. He would have been a scary third grader at the time. But yeah, shout out to that. That was at Brookfield Elementary. So that was my, I think, one and only play performance was that as an elf with, I think, one line, which was Santa's here or something like that.
Wow, and you nailed it there, though. So
yeah,
obviously you were perfect for the part.
Yeah, kudos to you, Emily. And I did just look it up. Emily does have an IMDb credit for that one. So go look that up. Yeah, boost
and,
your
IMDb an rating. Emmy, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah, prime I got all those EGOTs.
Yeah, EGOT. Yeah, all that.
Wouldn't that qualify for a Tony, too, since it's a live performance?
That's true. Yeah, it would be a
just
Tony.
Rattle them off.
Very good point. Yeah. I do not have a Tony. I was not much of a theater kid after elementary school because I got too goth. Heck yeah. But I was the Nutcracker in The Nutcracker. Not because I earned the role, but I think it was like first grade, maybe even kindergarten. James Brown, no relation, the actual first pick for Nutcracker, much like Helga in this episode, he was sick. He was ill the day that he was meant to play the Nutcracker. And I was so excited as the first understudy that I wore the little painted on magic marker mustache for days. I think both of the days without sort of bathing myself or doing anything that would be expected of a young child, keeping the Nutcracker mustache. And I was so excited, again, because like Helga, the girl I had a crush on was playing the other lead in the Nutcracker. So it was a very special time for me, and I never forgot it. And if you look beneath the beard that I have grown as an adult man, you will still see the faint outline of a magic marker mustache, because that was the highlight of my life. And I'm not saying I poisoned James Brown to do it, but it is interesting and perhaps convenient in a way that is alleged and cannot be proven in court of law that he was sick that day, is what I will say. So I got to have a sword fight with my best friend who was the Rat King. I got to be a Morris with my little kindergarten crush. And thank you for asking, Wayne. It was a very happy memory for me to recall.
I'm so glad I could unlock that memory for you. That sounds lovely. The reason I ask is because I think, like, in this episode, we had extremely podunk school plays in elementary school. And I think I was in the fifth grade when we did The Wizard of Oz, and I played whatever Al Frank Baum's character is, like the wizard. And then the next year we did Oliver and I was Fagin, and then I retired. And but also I thought it was funny that, because I also just unlocked a memory for how Mr. Simmons pleads with Arnold to take the role because he knows no one else wants to do it. Like, that was me, you know what I mean? Because it involved, you know, learning lines and staying at school after hours and singing and dancing and embarrassing yourself in front of the school. You know, it's you don't think about that stuff as an adult, but when you're like, you know, 10, 12 years old, you're like, what am I doing?
That is a really good point. And we haven't covered that on this, like in these discussions for a while, but those sort of weird expectations that the show sets up where like, yeah, in like first grade, my class did this reading of the Three Little Pigs to like some bored fourth graders or something. But like, we didn't go up on a stage and act out freaking Romeo and Juliet and kiss each other on stage. But to your point, I'm glad you brought up Wayne, first, I'm glad you brought up your decorated performance history. That is crucial to the context of this podcast and all of our livelihoods going forward. I'm glad that we have a rich artistic background, a nice little council with us today. And you know, the way Arnold kind of gets roped into that by Simmons, it does feel like, I mean, the meta text of the show playing into this episode, even if you've never seen, you know, a single episode before, it's like, oh, the show is called Hey Arnold. Oh, that character is Arnold. He's going to play Romeo. Like, why are we taking the first, like 10 minutes to dance around this? Let's just like get to the point. But you know, this for as like wild and somehow like weirdly reined in, it feels weird to say about this episode, but the fact that it almost takes place entirely either within the walls of the school or within the walls of like Helga or Arnold's homes. Like it feels still very like cozy and intimate in a way that is, I return to form is a weird thing to say because the show really never like leaves form, but that's kind of how it felt like. And this first act being this slow wind up of, all right, Arnold is going to be Romeo. And for as much as I love a good, like, tryout montage of kind of like what you were saying, Emily, fitting genre to characters and vice versa, the way in which we see the show do it time and time again. But the first half, you know, maybe eating up a little too much time, especially once we get to the second half and like get to the meat of it. You know, Helga maniacally, ruthlessly, just like the pacing of the second half of this episode, taking out the understudies above her one by one. Arnold getting help from the boarders to learn his lines. Some really nice sequences with Mr. Wynn, and almost like I don't know if I unlocked much of anything. Super duper. I think you all characterized this episode really well, but I kind of got thinking, you know, the slow wind up in which this episode moves from the first act to the second act, where bam, like that's where the bread and butter happens. And this is such an important episode. It's an important Helga episode. You can't help but think, how did it take almost three full seasons for Helga to be put into like a Shakespeare centric situation and play? And like, it's almost the show's slow wind up of like, we need these first 60 episodes to contextualize this entire world, to contextualize Helga, her family, Arnold, his family, his boarders, right? Like his non-biological family, all the Phoebe, Sheena, Rhonda, everybody that we see, to get to this moment where Helga walks out on the balcony and starts busting out Shakespeare like she was born to do it, the way that Francesca Marie Smith, the way in which we know she can read it. And so that is some payoff that really, really worked for me. And again, as everybody's been saying in this really immensely strange episode, but it is like classically appropriate that Helga is put in this situation that is uniquely catered to her strengths and interests. And I mean, this is an episode that, you know, I've said before, like I watch an episode and I remember, oh wow, this is actually weirdly very formative to my experience with the show and just my experience watching TV as a kid in general. And this was it ended up being a pretty big one for me, I think.
Wow. That's a really good point. Wayne, you made another really good point I want to return to. But first of all, I think like between the three of you, you've really shifted my opinion on this episode, which to be honest, I had originally kind of thought of as almost self-indulgent and almost a little bit of a victory lap or like a restatement of some of the show's themes. Now I think it's almost exactly the opposite in the sense that it's like really a workhorse or like the fulcrum on which the entire show rotates, right? Like it's almost at the exact center of the series. And like you said, Cody, it has this great, very sort of like three-act play structure to it, dramatic structure where in the first half of the episode is almost less interesting than most episodes in order to build toward this great momentum that we get that Emily, you referenced as like the great stakes that everything about this episode is about bringing together, right? Like this episode is one like long escalation toward the climax. And that sort of matches the dramatic sort of escalation of the series in general, like you said, Cody, right? So like in a weird way, this episode becomes very important like that, right? Like this becomes a very important episode to have because it's almost like a review of the previous three seasons to this point, right? Like, and maybe that's why it makes so much sense that they do so much restatement and almost like table setting. And why this episode almost feels more like a standalone, like special than an episode in and of itself is because they have to sort of like return us to that frame of mind and framework. And then I guess the question becomes like, what are we doing that for? Like, what is the point of creating this episode that sort of reflects and reiterates and even sort of interrogates the themes of the previous three seasons? And I think a lot of that is where Wayne's question came in, right? Which is that it's an episode about performance and it's an episode about plays within plays within plays, right? Like they even reference the play is the thing, which is a Hamlet quote about the mousetrap, which is the play within the play in Hamlet. Helga says that in the bathroom. And like in Hamlet, right? Like this is supposed to be a play within the show that is meant to sort of allow, it gives these characters an avenue to express their true thoughts and feelings, right? And their performances and the sort of quote unquote truth that they get to manifest in the final play, it is a reflection of their own performances as kids who are performing certain roles, right? So like Helga's performance as Juliet is more true, arguably, than her performance as Helga. And that seems to be a really important point, not only in this episode, but across the series as a whole. So I guess I'm really interested in like, what do you all think of Helga's arc here? And what do you think it suggests about sort of like what they're trying to say about the show as a whole? Because I think that this episode arrives at some pretty interesting conclusions about that. But so you're kind of blowing my mind here a little bit.
What I wanted to say, it does not really an answer to your question, but I was thinking the same sort of thing when people say, is Batman a disguise for Bruce Wayne or is Bruce Wayne a disguise for Batman?
That's right. See, exactly. Juliet is the disguise, or Helga is the disguise for the Juliet that is inside Helga, right? I think I followed that logic correctly.
Yeah, I think so. Well, also, never an improper point to bring up Batman. Shout outs to Batman or Bruce Wayne, come on the pod. I think it is, again, playing into like the meta text of this show and how that funnels into this specific episode. And this just goes on to further bolster how that second half comes across. But Helga using playing, you know, this is how people see me. This is what I know about these people. This is what the audience knows about these people. At least up to this point, we don't know a ton about Sheena, but at this point, like the second half is moving at such a breakneck, ruthless pace that just like, okay, Sheena's a character who thinks violence is bad and gross and gets freaked out by it. And we see her dancing with Eugene. Yeah, I'll buy that. You know, we've got 90 seconds tops with this character. I'll buy that. I'll buy that for a dollar. We know Rhonda, we know Phoebe, we know Lila well enough. And Helga, again, performance, right? Like her using these different, facets of her persona, and her, we've talked about like the self-consciousness of Helga and the self-awareness of Helga, in previous, episodes as well. Some really banger episodes that really get into the psyche of Helga, as well as some bangers yet to come. But it kind of an ingenious play to just like spend a few moments in different ways, say like, you know, Helga, we know Helga can act like this. This is her acting like this to get her way. And ultimately this is Helga at perhaps her most focused, as she can use all these things to channel, you know, what it is that she really wants to get, which is to lock lips with Arnold, who she loves apparently. That didn't realize that until this episode, they didn't really make that very obvious.
Yeah. And that was like, that was news to all of us, I think, right? Is that, oh my God, like Helga actually likes him. Like this whole, has it been the whole time or, yeah, no, I'm kidding. It's not even a funny joke, but, I was going to go into just more about each character, like quick aside, where I think this kind of chugs through just like little moments of each character and what they're all about, but just through tiny snippets. But to back up further just for a sec too, also the, Wayne called him the Squilliam Fancy Son. Character, I wrote down the annoying villainous theater rival of Simmons. but like, so he is basically the play within the play character too, but nothing happens at all with him. He's just sort of thrown in there as like a nod to we are play within a play at this point in this episode, kind of, I think. And I think also on that note, it does open at the very beginning with no theme song, just straight up orchestra warm up of, you know, strings squeaking, just like in the red chairs and the red curtains, and as if you're sitting down waiting for the play to start. And then it like right after that cuts to the opening, it like goes backwards and cuts to Helga and Arnold in the cafeteria with the Nickelodeon green slime nod, I feel, that they have like a little quick chat about and throw around. But yeah, there's just like so many quick little things like that. Wait, maybe it's just like nodding to a lot of things or trying to get little character snippets in real fast with so many characters. But the main event is just that one single kiss, and really everything else is just lead up or fun and games leading up to that. But so I'll just make a note of the other little character moments that I was making notes of in my notes, which is that Simmons talking to Curly and Harold and calling them out right away as Tybalt and Mercutio is great. And he immediately says Eugene should be Romeo. Well, Eugene does not want to kiss a girl. And Simmons maybe could have read the room there, would have liked to have thought that from him, but
that is a swing and a miss from old Simmons there. Not a great pick there, buddy.
Fam didn't recognize Fam, and he calls out Eugene to be the Romeo. So there's just like the quick moments of, well, Eugene definitely doesn't want to kiss a girl. He makes that very clear. I'm not doing that. And Harold and Curly get a moment to like laugh about cooties and then all walk out together being like, we are over this play. What the heck are you making us do, Simmons? So just those little tiny moments are nice, but I think it does also sort of somehow add to like maybe the scatterbrain nature of how it feels to watch this all in one sitting. But just another little note, I really like the girls' bathroom scene. So when we see Helga hearing about Romeo and Juliet get to kiss and Arnold is now going to be Romeo, I just got so excited when I first watched this that there was a girls' bathroom scene, because we haven't seen any at all as far as I can remember, at least none in the school. And that kind of put me right back to seeing those types of scenes in a lot of other Nickelodeon shows. And I just don't think we've seen it in the series. So just to be like, oh my gosh, all the girls at school in front of the mirrors chit-chatting about the play and who's going to get to kiss Arnold at the end of the final act.
Sorry, to interject, I also thought, like you were talking about all the ways the characters' personalities are reflected against, you know, in these roles. Did we see Gerald this episode? Was he in it at all?
He has no lines. I believe he appears in the background of one scene, but he is not in, which is weird because he is a clear choice for Mercutio, if you ask me. Much as I love my boy Curly. Yeah. No Gerald whatsoever. I'm really glad you brought up the little moments too, Emily, because like, I believe Cody, you said that during our watch party that this episode has everything, and it very much feels like another one of those episodes, right? Where like, that's another thing that they kind of tend to do in a half hour episode is like, they really do a good job of demonstrating just how dynamic and full this world is, right? Like, and again, that sort of contributes to my weird sort of pet theory that this is supposed to be an episode that's like an introduction to the series, or as you sort of suggested, Cody, maybe like a retreatment of the entire series thus far. Because like, we get Mr. Wynn and Oscar Kokoschka in this episode, of all things, right? Like, you would think that the school play episode would content itself to be about the school. And like, we get to see Curly, we see Stinky, we see Harold, we see Nadine and Rhonda and Phoebe. Like, all of these characters are so consistently characterized and carefully characterized. And we get to see Grandpa and Big Bob, right? So it's like, it really got me thinking, Emily, to your point about like, why are we doing all of this? Like, why are we setting up all of these stakes? Like, even Tim Curry character operates only to sort of characterize Simmons himself, right, in opposition, and to sort of like communicate the stakes and escalate the stakes, and to sort of communicate that the realness of Helga's performance won the day in the end, which I think is important to where this episode ends up. But it is really interesting, right? Like, the more I think we talk about this episode, the more I'm convinced that like all of these things that I read as sort of like weird, not narrative inconsistencies, but just sort of peculiarities of this episode are important for what this episode is doing, right? And I think maybe, ironically, it's one of the few episodes that is poorly served by watching week to week, right? Like, I think that this episode would be considerably more impactful if you just sort of, like, either were waiting for it on TV or if you stumbled across it rather than sort of, like, putting it in an order this way, because it sort of stands out, right? Like, it's again, it feels like a special episode. And I think maybe the reason why has to do with a lot of those, the way that it sets everything up to sort of like almost, I use the term course correct too much, but it feels like this is an episode about reminding you what Hey Arnold is about, right? In a really interesting way. So I don't know what you think about that, Cody.
I 100% agree. And I'm essentially just going to restate your thesis, but like kind of come at it from a different angle. And, you know, this... Stefan voice, this episode has everything. I mean, this episode could have been any number of these one things that any of these like A through G plots, if it really wanted to be, right? Like this could have just been a straight up, we're mapping these students onto these characters and we're going through tryouts and we're watching a production of Romeo and Juliet with no sort of heightened, you know, nuance or emphasis on any of the finer points, you know, none of this Helga stuff. Anything like that. This could have been an episode like that. It could have, it could have been a straight up Helga revenge story for 25 minutes. And I think we all would have liked that a whole bunch. This could have been an episode primarily focused on Tim Curry, the art critic. I think a lot of us would have liked that a whole bunch. This could have been an episode about Arnold being nervous for a school play where he has to kiss a girl. And we see him for 25 minutes, bop around to each one of the borders, get some tips of the trade on how to perform on stage, how to perform in front of his classmates, his friends, how to perform in front of, you know, his on stage partner who he has to, you know, kiss. This episode could have been any of those things. And it is not lost on me that we've used that logic in other discussions to like talk about why a particular episode or, you know, culmination of various subplots, like why that episode is lesser, or, you know, it feels like a mess, you know, it's weaker for like constructing itself in this way. But I don't, for whatever reason, feel like that's the case here. For this rendition of it feels like, you know, we only have Tim Curry for a couple of scenes, but in any of these stories, if you were to take them by themselves, each of those stories in the course of those 25 minutes, there would be breaks in the action. There would be gaps that need to be filled with something. And in this case, the gaps just happen to be filled with something like Tim Curry chewing on the scenery for, you know, 90 to 120 seconds, you know, like all of these things that could have been their own story come together and, you know, fill in the cracks and are in service of ultimately, you know, something that is, perhaps the sum that is greater than its parts. If it works to think of it that way, all in service of this big windup and then this payoff at the end, which I realize is mixing metaphors, you know, this big swing that feels like it takes forever. And then it finally connects at the end when Helga walks on stage and starts reciting Shakespeare and then kisses Arnold. And then Simmons is looking at his watch and everybody's like, why is this not stopping? It builds up to one of the defining moments of the series. I think, like, inarguably, and that in itself is more important than any of those other versions of this episode. And I'm thoroughly glad we got to experience this version of it.
Yeah, you just kind of put an idea in my head, like, this could have gone and ended so many different ways. Like, obviously, so just before Helga like monologues and she's preparing to kiss Arnold, like Rhonda even braces everybody in the audience, like, oh my God, it's really going to happen. And it could have been like one of those like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner movies. Like if you see Helga and Arnold kiss, that's it. You've just thrown the whole conceit of the show out the window, but it happened. And they did it in a funny way for comedic effect, but it's like, it was a happy ending. Like there were even some points where like Helga literally trips over herself on the balcony and Arnold forgets his lines. So you're thinking like, this is going to end poorly for everyone, but they pull it out and, like Cody, you said, deliver, you know, standing ovation performances.
Yeah, I think that's exactly, like, that's really where we need this episode to go, right? And I think that's the secret that brings together all of those different potential stories that you were talking about, Cody. And especially the way that this episode goes to such great lengths to recenter Helga, right? And to make this an episode about Helga, right? This is literally an episode about how we get Helga to be Juliet, right? But sort of broader and thinking metatextually outside of the conceit of the play within the play, it's about how romance actually works, right? Or about how self-discovery through and self-actualization through love actually works, as opposed to the way that it works within what these kids see as this idealized play, right? Which is what Romeo and Juliet is actually so much about, right? So it makes sense that that happens here. But so I think it's really important that, like, this episode, it sort of retreads the themes of Hey Arnold in order to come to that conclusion, right? That, like, the kids are going to be all right, right? Like, Arnold is right. It opens with his statement, his thesis statement about Helga. Like, Helga, you are actually a sensitive person. You just don't realize it. Or maybe you'll be able to show it someday. Helga, at the end of the second act, has this come to Jesus moment with her primary rival, Lila, where she is vulnerable for the first time. She leverages that vulnerability into this standing ovation performance that is very true. And then we default back to the ordinary world, right? Like, the very last part of this is Helga pretending that she wasn't affected again. And, like, the statement there seems to be that, like, in the end, Arnold is right. And, like, Helga can be a sensitive person, even if she's not ready to express it, and even if she can only express it in this sort of abstract performative way. That doesn't mean that there's something wrong with her, and that doesn't mean that she's not going to find her way, or that she's not going to be understood by Arnold, right? Because Arnold does understand her by the end of this episode, and so does everybody in the audience, right? And I think that, like, as Helga is the stand-in, ultimately, I think, for us, the viewer, and for the kids who are being given, quote-unquote, the tools to make this show work for them or to get through what they're going through, that seems to be the statement here, right? Is that, like, don't panic. Don't kill yourself like Juliet does at the end of Romeo and Juliet just because you have all of these feelings and these complications that you're not prepared to unpack or to grapple with, because you're going to find your way through it. Even if finding your way through it feels as strange and dysfunctional and sometimes as antisocial as it seems for Helga. At least that was my big takeaway. I'm really interested in this episode. The more we talk about it, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I was just thinking about their ages and then doing some Googling, and also thinking about Cody's point in the watch party of Simmons. Like, first and foremost, this is just not a good idea, I think, in general, which is, like, maybe also where this episode is kind of just sits weird. It's just, like, Simmons' idea to have fourth graders playing in Romeo and Juliet, that in and of itself is, like, a very weird basis for an episode about fourth graders. So I was thinking, though, about the kiss and the age. I was Googling the age of average age of a first kiss. Apparently, according to Google, my just first result here is that it's right around age 15. And age 15 is a grade 10 sophomore in high school. So we're talking about, like, a roughly, because in fourth grade you're roughly 9 or 10 years old, so like 5 to 6 years younger. And so I don't know, it puts this kiss for Helga and Arnold in a different context too, and is making me think a lot about Helga's maturity for her age. But in the sense of having these very big feelings that other characters have kind of crushes on each other that's made known. But with Helga, it's a different thing. It's a bigger thing. And it's more of, like, she's a little more grown up for her age. And yeah, Harry, what do you think about this news?
No, that's a perfect point, right? Like, I think that the precociousness of Helga is, like, really important to this series as a whole. And it is also kind of a perfect stand-in for childhood in general, right? Because that is one of the biggest dysfunctions of childhood, is that in so many ways and in so many different ways, kids feel both more advanced for their age and hopelessly behind their age and never really know where they're supposed to be, right? And hey, maybe everybody feels that way, because God knows I still feel that way. But it is sort of like at every stage of childhood development, you feel lost, right? Like you don't feel like you're 9 years old and like you have everything you need, you're equipped with everything you need to be a successful 9 year old. In some ways you feel smarter and more mature, like Helga, right? In some ways you feel less mature and way, and in some ways, in many ways, especially if you're a guy, the way that this show portrays them, you're just totally out of it and you just don't really know what's going on, right? And I think that like there is something so true to like putting these characters in situations where their dysfunctionality and their distance from where they're quote unquote supposed to be, as personified by the play, is meant to like demonstrate how that exact dysfunctionality is like the point, right? It's like we're supposed to see these kids as like really out of their depth, because the fact that we're all sort of out of our depth, especially at that age, and it's going to be okay, is kind of like the idea of both this show and this episode as the sort of play within a play, as it plays out, so to speak. So yeah, I think that like, again, like centering Helga in that way is so important for what both this episode and the show are trying to do, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I was 9 years old, I was only interested in stabbing fellers.
Oh, yeah, same, absolutely, right? Like I said, I think that the reason I was so excited to play the Nutcracker back then is because my best friend was the Rat King, and we got to have a totally rad sword fight, and I killed, like, 6 rats, dude. It was amazing.
They're rats. And to that point, too, so Mr. Wynn, who is a full-grown human man, adult cartoon man, he says it's too yucky to kiss a girl. And he's, what, 30-something, 40-something? So really, I guess that is a big part of it, just the age and the with the guys feeling so grossed out, yucked out by the thought of kissing a girl, and Mr. Wynn even himself. But then Helga makes this entire episode about it. So, yeah, no matter the age, kissing is a strange thing.
I really love that the boarders have that role. I love that, like, in a dysfunctional episode, we all also get to see these hilarious sort of, like, backward attempts to help Arnold that end up hindering him all the more. But then at the end of the day, they come back around, right? Like, both Oscar and Mr. Wynn actually do end up legitimately helping Arnold, especially Mr. Wynn. And their presence, which, first of all, extremely heartwarming that the boarders came to the school play. Like, come on, I was tearing up. But also, just the way that they actually come around to help, that's sort of another, like, motif on the major theme here, right? Which is that, like, okay, like, it's not going to look the way you think it's going to look. You're not going to be where you think you should be. But some things are going to work themselves out, right? Like, I think that that's such an important part of this. And I think that even like the Big Bob element and even the border element contributes to that a little bit.
Agreed. Everybody else had their quips about kissing, so I'll just say, when I was 9 years old, the only lovely kiss I was interested in was a move on a Pokemon card. Move on a Pokemon card.
Do you remember which Pokemon had lovely kiss? Was it Jinx?
It was Jinx, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Pokemon cards. And shout out to you all. This was a really, you know, it was a weird episode. We didn't know what energy we were going to come in with. Harry was like, yeah, I don't think this will be a terribly long episode. I don't have a lot to say. That was my bad impression of Harry. But hey, look at us now. Right? Look at us go. This is, I've had a lot of fun, and I can't think of a better way to wind this one down than opening up the floor for any lingering threads or shout outs or anything like that that folks would like to call out before we put a cap on this wild and crazy time that we call school play.
Bad impression, Cody. I don't sound like that at all. I guess I just had one more question, which is that, like, Wayne, you brought this up early on, but like Helga does some really wild stuff in this episode, huh? Like some pretty over the line stuff. Like she basically like psychologically traumatizes her best friend in order to win this role from her. And are we okay with the lack of comeuppance here? I think I kind of ultimately am, because this is Helga's show, right? And because the point is supposed to be that like, oh, that dysfunction is a result of her repression of her true feelings, and she does overcome those even if she is not directly punished for the fallout that those that repression reeks. I think that like it's kind of important not to punish Helga in that context, right? Because like we have to make it okay that they're learning and growing and being dysfunctional in that way. But I guess a gut check on you guys, like how did you feel about Helga in this episode? And do you feel like it was okay ultimately that she treated all of her friends and community members in that way? Do you think that like spitting out her feelings was enough of a comeuppance, or did you want to see more?
When I first watched this in preparation for our guest Wayne here, I was upset with Helga for all of what she did to the girls. Because, I mean, the girls in and of themselves, they were excited for playing that role. They are, you know, they deserve respect and the chance to, I don't know, have fun on stage and all of that. And she manipulated each of the situations so that they were so freaked out and scared to even approach the stage again. But in the evil mastermind way that is Helga Pataki, where she honed in on each of their weaknesses, so to speak. And, you know, Rhonda with the... doesn't want to wear an ugly dress because she's too into fashion. Sheena's all about being a flower power hippie child who likes to dance around with Eugene. So she doesn't want to be associated with something that's got violence in it. And Phoebe, her best friend, Helga's best friend, Phoebe, she's did her the worst, I think, by, just being like putting the pressure on her and being like, well, yeah, really? You want to memorize all those lines, Phoebe? Which is why I think I particularly liked Lila's scene with her, not just for the confession, which is kind of funny and a big deal for the series, for Helga to be actually confessing that to someone else up here, but just for Lila to be like, this is not hidden with me. Like, you can't get this past me, and just not being phased. And I think justice for Lila in this one. I don't know. I was cheering for her. In that scene especially, but ultimately I was upset with Helga, and I get why she did what she did, but I don't think it's like justified to be treating her best friend and her classmates like that and kicking them out of a play.
Yeah, I think, you know, topping my list and probably all of our lists of things that we really hate to see, it's Phoebe experiencing any harm or injustice or anything like that. But I offer this up, and the show kind of waffles on the canonical like idea of, does Phoebe know that Helga is in love with Arnold? Like they sort of take liberties with that depending on the scenario to kind of suit the plot. I find it, you know, if I'm Phoebe, you know, I would hate to take this opportunity away from my best friend Helga, knowing that this is something that she would probably want more than anything else in the world, is to play opposite Arnold in a play of Romeo and Juliet.
So you've got smoke for Phoebe.
No, not
Helga psychologically destroyed her, and you're like, yeah, but she should have stepped down before Helga even had to do it.
I'm just offering it up. No smoke to be had. I do not. I never felt for a second that Helga was not getting her proper comeuppance. I am very sympathetic to the idea that opening up about feelings and things you would want to stay bottled up, like letting all that stuff go, is one of the most brutal things that you can do. And Lila coaxed that out of Helga, and Lila, you know, had a nice smug little, it was like, I had a feeling anyway. I just, you know what? So that's where I ended up. For me, it was a no harm, no foul situation, which, you know what? I accept that I might be wrong, but also I just like saying no harm, no foul because it's a sports thing. So we all came out winners today.
I think it's interesting, right? Like, I think that Helga's comeuppance is that is what Emily said, right? Like, she does have to confront those feelings honestly. And I think that that's a really important sort of, like, that's the real crux of this episode more than anything else, is that final, like, moment she has with Lila. And it's ironic in an episode that is all about sort of, like, resetting the stakes of Hey Arnold that they don't get into this, but it's super important that it's Lila, right? Because, like, Lila's the last person she wants to admit that to, because she's the girl that Arnold likes. So I wonder why they didn't show that. Maybe they just ran out of time or something. But that was huge for me as well. So I think that you guys are right. But yeah, I don't know. Justice for Phoebe, justice for Lila for sure. You know, good on Arnold too. Underrated MVP of this episode. He really did it. He learned his lines. Shout outs. That's what. Oh, and shout outs to the constipation joke. That's my last shout out. There's a weird constipation joke in this. I thought of it when you said she was bubbling up her feelings, and then I thought of what Emily said in our chat, which was Helga bottles a lot of things up after she heard that joke.
Oh,
so
no.
Shout outs to Emily's good joke in the chat, and shout outs to the very weird constipation joke. Do you think that the average person watching this show at the time knew what constipation was, or do you think that was just one for the adults?
It is one for the adults. We are above average people who are watching that in 2022 as older people, and I thought it was a great constipation joke. So shout outs to the Steves for bringing that one home. Any other shout outs or constipation related comments from you all? Pretty please have something to say about constipation or anything else.
Yeah, no, not going to touch on that one, but
that's fair.
I would like to shout out Miriam's husband, I guess, because Big Bob's real quick scene with Helga practicing lines with her in the living room made me laugh so hard. His delivery, it's like, what, the low timbre of his voice or something, just the way he talks. And he's going, "Lady, by yonder blessed vow." And then he's like, "Jesus Christ," or something. Like, he's so upset that he has to even do this. And then he's like, "Okay, yeah. Like, Helga needs me right now. I guess I'll be a dad." So shout out to Big Bob. Shout out also to Stinky, who I think is my favorite performer of all the Shakespearean kids as the friar. His deliveries at the end of the play are just so funny and so good. And he, like, I think he crushes the actual lines from the play. But then he ends at the very end after he, like, is crushing it. Then he walks off stage, goes, "Okie dokie," and just walks off of away from the scene. So, yeah, shout out to Stinky and Big Bob, I guess.
Sorry, if I could just do one last shout out. Curly had some really good deaths, and I'm always a sucker for an overly dramatic, drawn-out death scene.
Extremely good. Well, hey, in an episode and conversation that is it circles around the idea of performance, one thing that was not something that we put on or embellished or are really leaning on as far as from a performance standpoint is our enthusiasm for being here talking about Hey Arnold and our enthusiasm for having Wayne on the pod. Wayne, thank you so much again for being here today with us as we near the end of season 3. Remind us, where can people find you, and is there anything that you would like to plug on this fine day?
No, I'm Stain Wayne Rook on Twitter, and I'm just cruising. Thank you for having me. That's what I meant to say too. This was fun.
Hey, no, likewise. Thanks for being here. You love to hear a fella cruising. And we're gonna cruise on out of this one. And if you scrubbed to the end, we're just going to remind you that this has been Stoop Kids, and thank you for listening to us. We're a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narvison, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And remember, if you tell anyone, grrr.